first hustle was I was a very active babysitter and tutor. I always loved kids and it was always a great way to make money. Really preppy ribbon belts and they were absurdly expensive, usually like $40. And my sister and I would go to the fabric store, buy some fabrics and basically design our own and then sell them at our middle school.
Typically entrepreneurs are the oldest child.
I'm the youngest.
Yeah.
The youngest of three. And my mom has always raised us to be incredibly independent, to not need to always follow the rules and to kind of carve your own path potentially. I really chose my classes based on what I was genuinely interested in. Our college students will go around the world to teach English. And I obviously went to China because of my language skills. No idea what I wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to be in China. But I ended up getting a job with PwC based out of New York. I did that for 2 years. Okay, I wanna go to China. And the response I would get is, you're 22. What I ended up doing was getting really, really crafty. See who on LinkedIn met those three criteria and I would reach out and play the alumni card as best as I could. We spoke and I ended up moving to China. The team that I was hired to was one of the coolest teams that I could have ever been on. Like, a lot of it was on us to figure out what is the brand, what kind of work do we actually do. So it was very entrepreneurial in that sense. That experience, I think, kind of planted this entrepreneurial bug in me because we were building this startup within a larger corporation. And I was navigating my career within the big corporate landscape. I was super frustrated that even though there are all these things set up to help us grow and succeed, like online learning platforms and mentorship like system and all these things, that ultimately I was still going to my mom and sister for career advice and that wasn't cutting it. I ended up not getting the promotion. Then they told me I did get the promotion. You know, sorry, like we thought you got it, we don't like the mix up. That I went home, I went to sleep that night, and I just didn't sleep one wink, and I had this notepad next to my bed, and I just sketched out the entire pitch deck for what the Lighthouse is today. About this platform where you could get connected to the right person at the right time to get the insight that you needed to grow one step further in your career. So I worked on it for 6 months before quitting my job. Matches that were perfect for you. And it was super easy to schedule that session and schedule follow-on sessions because each session had an objective tied to it. Career coaching is not new, but the model is incredibly out of date. So the model still is that you get matched with a traditional career coach who kind of gives you one-size-fits-all advice. There's someone who's a full-time career coach, so they're not in it. They don't have experience in the field that you're looking to grow in. With the Lighthouse, you know that you're getting career insight that's personalized to you, that's rooted in real industry experience. These like random paying customers that really came through word of mouth, really high quality insiders on the platform that wanted to be part of what we were building. Yeah, it's definitely empowering people with information to grow themselves and kill it.
And I assume you could do video or?
All through video. Selling to companies that offer the Lighthouse as an employee benefit. And companies are looking for ways to develop and grow their own employees. So it was a really nice fit. I'm a solo founder. As a solo founder, you need to get really resourceful. You can't do it all. Members who are paying and investing themselves work at huge companies that it's surprising that they feel like they need to use this additional resource because their companies aren't doing a good enough job. So those people that were giving us advice are now some of our earliest partners in the B2B offering. One is fast growth tech companies. And the reason for that is they are growing really quickly. They sometimes don't have HRs. Right now we are fundraising for a pre-seed round.
Did you have to go through a lot of no's to get to the yes?
Yeah, you're always going through no's. It sucks. Really, these conversations have taught me that you have to own your own traction. That confidence projects into conversations. B2B sales is slow, so you need to like plan for it. Lighthouse insiders who are doing this after work, on the weekends, on their lunch breaks, before they go to work at 7 a.m.
How do you think you've grown, Courtney, as an entrepreneur?
I'm being comfortable with not having it all figured out, and that was a big change. Coming up with the idea, coming up with the strategy is almost the easy part. Executing on it and tweaking it and changing it and making it work is the most frustrating but rewarding process. Thelighthouse.us.
Welcome to Startup Hunter, also streaming on YouTube. I am here with Courtney Brand of The Lighthouse, which is a career coaching platform built for the future of work. It's about you, and it's all about you. So, what we do on this show is we go all the way back. So Courtney, I would like to know, where were you born and what did your parents do?
I was born in North Carolina. No, not North Carolina. I was born in Northern California. Sorry, I was going to go with California and I wanted to get more specific. My dad has done a couple of things ranging from working in investment banking to being an Uber driver to now he's the CFO at a biotech startup.
And when you were little, what was he doing?
He was in banking then.
And working for somebody else?
Yes, working for somebody
else. And how about your mom?
And my mom started off her career working at Siemens in Germany. And then was a stay-at-home mom for 20 years, and then was one of those kick-ass women that got herself back into the workforce, and now is a financial advisor.
So, and by Northern California, Bay Area or even further north?
Bay Area.
Okay. What was the first hustle you ever had that you ever did as a kid?
My first hustle was I was a very active babysitter and tutor. So in middle school and high school, I think I started babysitting when I was like 11 years old, which is shocking that a parent trusted me with their child. But I always loved kids and it was always a great way to make money. So that's what I did all throughout middle school, high school, college, and a little bit into adulthood.
And was that your primary like place that you were focusing your energy? Do you remember anything like you trying to sell something or?
I did try to sell things here and there. I think the biggest example was my sister is now a designer and has always been artistic and creative. So in middle school, my family moved to Connecticut, which is a really preppy state, and these ribbon belts were really popular. Uh-huh. You probably have no idea what I'm talking about, but they're these really preppy ribbon belts and they were absurdly expensive, usually like $40. And my sister and I would go to the fabric store, buy some fabrics, and basically design our own, and then sell them at our middle school.
But I think it's interesting because with tutoring children, that's somewhat similar to what you're doing now.
Yeah, it's definitely empowering people with information to grow themselves and kill it in their own past, whatever that looks like.
Did you ever do anything really creative with a kid? Like, not just like, here's your homework, do your homework, you know, but if they were struggling or they couldn't sit still, do you remember doing anything creative with a kid?
I worked with one kid who had some disabilities, and so that definitely required a little bit more creativity than an average kid. In terms of specifics, I think it was always just making it seem fun and focusing more on the empowerment aspect of like, hey, this is for you, this is not for me. I think reframing it is always a really important thing to do whenever you're encouraging someone else.
Yes. Talk about that, reframing it.
Reframing it. So the way that I think about this now is that there's a lot of information out there on advice, how-tos, how to self-optimize, and all of these things, and honestly, it's exhausting. And not everyone has the same definition of success and not everyone is working towards the same thing. So I'm a big believer that advice, guidance, insight is really more about sharing experience and taking that insight and applying it to your own path.
Do you think you were starting to develop some of that awareness as a babysitter and to try and
Not at all.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I don't really see. I mean, now that you draw the parallel, I think they probably are connected in some way in terms of habit. But I joke that I'm an accidental entrepreneur. I never thought that I would be founding a company. It really was something where I was, I started off my career working in management consulting. So I was working for PwC for 5 years, at first in New York City, and then I went to Shanghai with them. And when I was in Shanghai with them, I actually absolutely loved my job and had this experience at a really young age early on in my career to know what it means to actually be really engaged and obsessed with the work that you're doing every day and how that really impacts every other part of your life. But throughout those 5 years, even though I was very happy, I had a few different experiences of what I call now career intersection points. So points where I was navigating something, whether it was getting ready for a performance review, or whether it was someone on LinkedIn contacting me and offering me a job, or whether it was going up for promotion at work. And in all of those moments, I was super frustrated that despite having a big network, a ton of LinkedIn connections, and working at this big company, that when it came down to who am I calling right now for career advice, it was still, in my case, my direct network. It was my mom and my sister. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, there was a huge gap in context there. First of all, advice from your mom is not objective. She always thinks you deserve the promotion.
Right.
And secondly, neither one of them, in my case, worked in my field. And so there was a huge amount of effort spent on explaining the different terminology, the different career paths, and so on. And so that really was the inspiration for how in 2019, when there's so much information, when there's so many options that we're navigating our careers, that there's no better way to navigate that with confidence and clarity.
Okay, so I want to go a little more chronologically though.
Yeah.
And I want to get back to the belts.
Yeah.
Like, was that a quick thing? Like, did that just last a month?
Hard to say. I think it probably lasted like 1 year of middle school.
And how many belts do you think you sold?
No idea. Probably like dozens, not that many. This wasn't some like overnight success where we like built up a belt business.
And then you're on Shark Tank.
Yeah, not that story. Not that story.
Was your sister, she worked with you, right?
Yeah.
Was she the ringleader, or do you think the belts were like your thing and she was helping you?
You know, it's funny to think about it now because she's still a designer and she has her own swimwear brand that she's building. And she's very much the creative, the designer. We were both kind of doing it because the design behind ribbon belts is pretty straightforward. You take one pastel and layer it with some polka dots or whatever it is. So I think it was a pretty collaborative effort between the two of us.
And older sister, younger sister?
Older sister by 1 year.
Interesting. Typically entrepreneurs are the oldest child.
I'm the youngest.
Yeah.
The youngest of three.
That's even more interesting. So as the youngest child, like, your older siblings had already blazed the trail for you. What do you think it's like being a younger child? There was only one year age gap, so it's not like you were one of those younger only children with like a large age gap. Like, what do you think it's like to be the youngest child and an entrepreneur?
I think as the youngest child, you're given a lot more freedom than the older children.
Yeah.
Your parents have been broken in at that point.
Exactly.
And my mom has always raised us to be incredibly independent. So I think the independence she raised us with, plus the fact that I was this younger child who had a lot more freedom than my sisters, I don't know, maybe that taught me, you know, how to use that freedom and to not need to always follow the rules and to kind of carve your own path potentially. But I don't know, I've never reflected on it in that way.
Yeah, no, I think the freedom is key. And so you go to high school in the Bay Area.
My family, after the 2001 bubble burst, my dad lost his job, so we moved to the East Coast. We moved to Connecticut.
Yeah.
So I went to middle school and high school in Connecticut.
So was that a culture shock for you?
Yes, we had a snow day in May, which felt crazy to us.
Right. Yeah, the 2001 bubble was really massive. We've had another tech bubble, not really a tech bubble, but another bubble since then. Maybe we're in a tech bubble right now. You come to Connecticut, and where did you go to college?
I went to Georgetown University in Washington, D.C.
And what did you study?
I studied Mandarin, business, and history.
Ah, so this is how, okay.
This is the China connection.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Did you like your classes?
I was obsessed with them. I think maybe this ties to the freedom piece. I really chose my classes based on what I was genuinely interested in. I was in the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, so we had a lot of freedom within that. And there was no clear career path or no clear passion that like stood out to me. So I just looked at, okay, I've taken classes for a year here now, which ones are my favorite? Chinese was by far my favorite. I just fell in love with the language, fell in love with the culture, the history, everything. So I really focused on that. And then...
你喜欢中文吗?
我非常喜欢中国.
很好.
也会这样.
I'm not getting it. I've taken a few Chinese classes.
That's awesome. It's a tough language.
Yes. Oh, the writing is so much more difficult to me than the speaking.
Yeah, and my professor freshman year was Taiwanese, and they use traditional characters, which are far more complex, and so I had to learn both.
Oh my God.
Now I can only write and read simplified. My traditional is awful.
Yeah, it's a lot of information, but there's a lot of similarities between traditional.
Yes.
And we're getting sidetracked. So a clear career path wasn't evident to you. Here's what I want to know, was there any pressure in your family while you're in college to like, you know, you've got to be a lawyer or you've got to be a doctor or, you know, something. Was there any pressure on you to like...
do one path?
Yeah.
No, my parents never put that kind of pressure on us to choose one career path. We were pretty self-driven. And so they trusted that our own drive would take us somewhere successful that could pay the bills.
Now, which way is the Navy Yard? That's the WeWork, building.
Yeah.
Oh, this way?
We could even walk through the Navy Yard if you want.
So that's really interesting. Now, do you think you think that's because your older siblings had broken in, your parents, and by the time they got to you, they were just tired and exhausted?
No, I actually think that applied to all three of my sisters. My mom really, at a young age, instilled in us that we were responsible for our own lives and our own learning. And so we were never those kids that were sitting around the kitchen table doing homework with our moms. We came home, we went straight to our rooms, we got down to the books on our own. And so we've always been very, very self-driven.
Wow. Did you ever help each other out in homework?
I'm sure sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully. We're very close, so I'm sure that happened.
Okay, so really interesting. So freshman year, you didn't really know what you wanted to do.
Yep.
And you just liked Chinese, so you just kept doing more Chinese.
Yep, more Chinese.
And you took 4 years of Chinese?
Yes.
Wow. The other two classes that you liked?
So my major was Chinese, and then I minored in business and in history.
And in college, did the babysitting stop?
No, the babysitting continued and I focused more on tutoring because it paid better.
For children?
Teenagers.
And here you are in DC. Did you have like a network of people to like recommend you to kids or did you go through a program?
I think I went through one of those tech platforms where you create a profile and then you get matched with people.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So that already existed. Wow.
Yeah. I'm not that old.
I remember it was the Princeton Review when I was in high school.
To find babysitting jobs?
No, tutoring.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Yeah, mine was probably like tutor.com or something.
You're still tutoring, you're still making money. That's amazing. So how did you balance doing tutoring and school at the same time? Were you burning the candle from both ends?
I definitely worked hard in college. I was tutoring on the side, studying, and then involved in a couple of different clubs and leadership activities. The one that I went deepest on was this organization called Learning Enterprises, which is a nonprofit that basically every summer college students will go around the world to teach English. And I obviously went to China because of my language skills there.
Mainland.
Mainland, yeah.
Where?
It's this teeny, teeny village called Minxi Village, which the way we got there was we flew into Shanghai, took a train ride to Nanjing, which is like 2 or 4 hours, and then we took a 24-hour sleeper train to this other mini city, and then from there got on a bus. So we were in the middle of nowhere.
And what was like, each town in China typically has like a purpose maybe? Or like, what did this town do? Was it just a normal town?
The village I was in was very, very rural.
So tea and rice and lotus roots?
Yeah, there were a lot of tea fields because it was southern China. But a lot of the people who had careers had to leave the village to actually go and work and then sent money home.
Wow. And that must have been a culture shock for you.
It was incredible. It was an amazing summer and it was the first time I ever went to China. So I'd been studying the language for over a year at that point. I was really interested in it, and then I got to actually see the country firsthand and the incredible dichotomy between flying into Shanghai, which is a metropolis, and then, you know, 2 days later being in this teeny village in the middle of nowhere and seeing those two dynamics at play. It was amazing.
Yeah. And how did it change the way you view the world?
Going to China definitely confirmed the path that I was already on, which was really being committed to mastering the language, to understanding the culture as best as I could, and to learning the history.
Yeah. So you first, now did you do that all 4 summers?
Yeah, throughout college I was back and forth in China. So the first summer I taught English in that village. The second summer I had some odd jobs in the States for the beginning of the summer, and then I went and I got a scholarship to study in Taipei.
Yeah.
So I did that. The next summer I got an internship working for a consulting firm in Shanghai.
And we'll talk about that. Like what did you do?
So this was the summer going into senior year, which like junior summer internship is a big time because usually the internship you get lines up to a full-time job.
Yeah.
My only criteria was I wanted to be in China. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to be in China.
Yeah.
The problem was I had zero network in China. And so what I ended up doing was getting really, really crafty or creepy, depending on your outlook, on LinkedIn and on our alumni network's website. And I basically would go into Google and I'd type in Georgetown, where I went to school, Shanghai, which is where I wanted to be, and then a company name. So Google, Apple, local companies as well. And I would just see who on LinkedIn met those three criteria, and I would reach out and play the alumni card as best as I could. A lot of people did not respond, but a few people did, and I had some really interesting conversations, and one of those conversations actually led to the summer internship that I had that summer.
Wow. But it wasn't with Google or Apple?
Nope. It was with a small consulting firm called New Pacific Consulting at the time. The summer I got there, they were acquired by a larger company that's based here in Boston called the Parthenon Group, which has since been acquired by Ernst & Young. So ultimately, it became a big brand, but when I got there, it was going through the process of being acquired.
Now, what were you actually doing?
So it's a management consulting firm, which to dumb that down as much as possible is basically helping companies navigate their business problems. And our focus was on private equity firms that were operating in China, some industrial companies.
American private equity?
Both. Uh-huh. Well, it was mostly international companies that were opening up or growing businesses within China.
Which is, I mean, now, what year was this?
2012.
So Uber was just really starting to make forays into China.
Uber was not in China at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can talk about that because that was really interesting.
Well, it's an interesting topic because, you know, here you have Uber, you think it's a giant company, you think it's unstoppable, and yet they really couldn't get in there.
Yeah. I mean, they had a strong presence. Like, I think I had both apps on my phone when I lived in China. I really experienced that when I started off my career in New York, but then I moved to China. So it was really that time of my life that I was in China and Uber was big and Didi was big.
Yeah.
And we completely, as a consumer, benefited from that competition. I remember I would open up my two apps side by side and just see what the lower price was. And some of the promotions were absurd. Like, I remember one time I took like a 45-minute car and I paid 1 RMB, which is 1/6 of a dollar. So like, it was just, yeah, we totally benefited as the consumers from that.
Like free travel.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Practically.
Yeah, but then DD won.
Now, you said you worked for Pricewaterhouse as your first job?
Yes.
Wow, that's like a giant, giant firm. So were you a cog in the wheel or did you have freedom? Like, talk about that.
So I had two very different experiences with PwC. When I was a senior in college, at this point, I really still wanted to work in China, but I made the decision that for my first job out of college, that getting really solid training was going to be important. So for that reason, I decided to start in New York, where a lot of these headquarters were, and I knew I would get that strong kind of fresh grad training experience. And PwC felt like the opportunity that would have the highest probability of taking me to China.
Uh-huh.
Actually, when I was applying to the PwC job, they had mentioned in the info session that they had this whole China initiative where you could get a job in China. And I was like, oh, perfect, this is exactly what I want. And I resume dropped, and I immediately got an email probably like 15 minutes later, and they're like, Courtney Brand, like, this program isn't for you. This is for Chinese nationals that have studied internationally in the US and that want to go back home for jobs. Like, this is for Chinese locals only. And they saw my full name, were like, there's no way she's that. So that was kind of a funny story. But I ended up getting a job with PwC based out of New York. I did that for 2 years. I think.
Did you go to China at all in those 2 years?
No, I didn't. The whole time I was networking internally and trying to meet the right people and trying to do a great job in my team so that I could get the opportunity to move to China with them. But it took a lot of conversations because the response I got was, I was like, hey, I want to go to China. And the response I would get is, you're 22.
Yeah, but you're already like 5 years training. You've already been there every
Thank you.
Every
that
year
was my college. Argument. That was not enough.
That they're totally missing the ball.
Thank you. I wish you were the one with the decision maker. The pushback I got, which is a fair pushback, is that, you know, working internationally is what everyone at the firm wants to do at some point in their careers. You're 22, wait your turn. And that just wasn't going to cut it for me.
Yeah, that's like,
I wanted to get the experience. And so after 2 years, I ended up, the partner on my team introduced me to another partner who had just moved to Hong Kong to start this new practice that was focused on digital strategy consulting, and they were growing a team. And we spoke, and I ended up moving to China 2 years after starting my first job, which apparently I learned later was the earliest I could have legally been in the country. And what I mean by that is that as an expat, to work legally in China, you have to have minimum 2 years work experience under your belt. So I literally moved like 1 week after I hit that.
Wow.
So the timing worked out beautifully, but it felt like a long process in the moment.
Yeah, so was this still with PwC when you went to Hong Kong?
I went to Shanghai. The boss was in Hong Kong, but I went to Shanghai with PwC. When I got there,
So all of your, you had found like a position in PwC.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was not easy. but it happened, which was amazing. And when I got there, the team that I was recruited for on my contract, it was called the propositions team. And I had no idea what that meant. I had no idea what kind of consulting I'd be doing. But I just wanted to be in China, and so that was enough for me. And it turned out that the team that I was hired to was one of the coolest teams that I could have ever been on. Like, I literally fell into my dream job.
What was it?
Yeah, so a lot of the consulting firms were starting to introduce these new digital strategy consulting practices, which were helping the Fortune 100 and Fortune 500 companies to keep up with the digital disruption that they were facing. So very traditional companies like a Mercedes-Benz or like a Microsoft, all of a sudden we're seeing these new players popping up, and so they had to figure out how they could be more agile, how they could be more tech-enabled, and so our job was to help them do that.
So were you like at a desk?
So because the nature of the team was different and because we were this startup within a larger corporation, I should note that this team didn't exist in China yet. We were building it. And when I got there, it was me and like three Taiwanese guys, some Shanghainese guys. Like, it was a really small team. And so a lot of it was on us to figure out what is the brand, what kind of work do we actually do, what is our unique advantage, and what kind of clients do we want to go after, and how do we pitch them on this kind of work. So it was very entrepreneurial in that sense. And because that was the nature of our team, they actually designed our office to look a little bit different than the rest of kind of corporate PwC. So we had standing desks and we had a bar and I think we had a little robot around. So they tried to make it feel different.
What did the robot do?
I still don't really know. It talked.
It talked.
Yeah, it talked.
I love it. So was that successful? Did you have success there?
Yeah. So it really, that experience, I think, kind of planted this entrepreneurial bug in me, because we were building this startup within a larger corporation, and I learned a lot from that. And also just by being on a small team that's growing really quickly, the opportunities that you get are a lot higher than like the opportunities you would get if you're working on a big team back in New York. So I was like selling work at age 27, which is, you would not do that until you're like director level in New York.
Yeah.
And that was incredible. And also because the team was so small, we were the ones interacting with the C-level execs at huge companies, like massive companies that we all know well. And so also to get that exposure at that junior level in your career, and to also from that get the confidence of like, yeah, I deserve, and I've worked hard enough to have a seat at this table and to be part of this conversation. And my perspective is helping to drive their business forward.
Incredible. So here you are, like a junior Carly Fiorina. You're already like taking names. You're a mover and shaker at what, like 27 by the time?
Yep,
you've been sitting at the C-level tables in Shanghai with all the executives. So why didn't you just continue that? I'm sure they were offering you lots of money. Why didn't you just continue doing that?
I didn't continue doing that for two reasons. So one was I had a pretty kind of tough experience that really inspired the Lighthouse. So when I was navigating my career within the, you know, big corporate landscape, I was super frustrated that even though there are all these things set up to help us grow and succeed, like online learning platforms and mentorship like system and all these things, that ultimately I was still going to my mom and sister for career advice, and that wasn't cutting it. So the big example was I was going out for promotion. I had this pretty strong case. I'd sold client work and so on. But it's still a very political thing, and you have to get a lot of people on board with this promotion conversation. I ended up not getting the promotion. Then they told me I did get the promotion. Then they told me I didn't get the promotion. It was really confusing, and it was the day that they finally told me, you know, sorry, like we thought you got it, we don't like the mix up, that I went home, I went to sleep that night, and the entire, I just didn't sleep one wink, and I had this notepad next to my bed, and I just sketched out the entire pitch deck for what the Lighthouse is today.
Okay.
Of this concept, which is how can you create this platform that brings together the right people to, so that you can be empowered with the right career insight in the right moment from the right person to move one step further in your career. And it was also inspired by the fact that on LinkedIn, I was having a bunch of people reach out to me who wanted to pick my brain about management consulting or digital strategy or working internationally. And I was having these conversations, by the way, recognizing that LinkedIn ghosting is a real thing and most people either don't respond or they respond 3 months later. But I was taking these calls because I really enjoy those conversations. And in having them, I was realizing the limited impact that a 30-minute LinkedIn informational gives. So
ghosting is like, business ghosting is a real thing.
Business ghosting is a real thing.
I think it's sort of short term.
It's one time. It's one time, it's high level. It's like overly formal once you do get connected with them and once you do have that conversation.
So you wrote down your idea and it had to do with getting advice.
Yeah, it was all about this platform where you could get connected to the right person at the right time to get the insight that you needed to grow one step further in your career.
So here's what I want to know. You didn't get the promotion. Did you just like quit after that?
No, I didn't quit. I had this idea. I put it into a deck as consultants do.
Let me get the tracker. So you put it into a deck?
Yes.
With the intention of,
getting, that's how I thought in those days. That's how like a consultant is taught to think, is in terms of a 20-page deck. So that's what I did.
Did you plan on like pitching your deck to?
No, I just planned on like getting the idea out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was definitely not ready to send with any, and maybe to share, what I ultimately did was share it with a few friends and be like, does this make sense? Have you experienced this problem? What do you think? So I guess it was really like an ideas deck to get the idea out there.
How long were you sitting on the deck? You had the inspiration one night. Did you, like within 1 week, send it out to your friends, or was it a slow process?
I started talking about it and sending it out pretty immediately to get people's thoughts. I started like nights and weekends just working on this as a concept, which a lot of that stage, basically I worked on it for 6 months before quitting my job.
Now by work on it, what do you mean? Were you writing code? Were you making infographics? Were you lining up people?
I was working on it, and the beginning days meant having a lot of conversations and hearing what people were doing to get career advice, so kind of market research. It was a lot of hours spent researching what kind of solutions exist out there, and does this not exist already?
And tell me, like, why did you, like, what was there a hole in the market, or were you just copying somebody else?
Yeah. So what we found is that there are two, that we found that we're at the beginning of this growing trend, which was really exciting but also scary, because that means you need to act quickly. What we found is that LinkedIn had recently introduced this thing called Career Connect, where basically you can set a setting on your LinkedIn to be open to giving and receiving career advice. And I've been testing it as, you know, like one of their beta users. And ultimately, there's a lot of gaps in that solution that something like the Lighthouse is able to fill.
So does the LinkedIn connect you to humans?
Yes.
Okay. So what about it is bad?
So the challenge with it is that you're being connected to strangers. Like the people I've been matched with are people that are across the world, and they're like a 40-year-old man working in some field that actually isn't relevant to me.
Yeah.
So there's very little trust built up. There's still a lack of incentives in that that person very rarely actually reaches out to me, because they're viewing me as a stranger and I'm viewing them as a stranger. So there's no trust, there's no incentives. And oftentimes that match gets made and then it just sits in your inbox and no one does anything with it. So that was one of the big challenges, is like LinkedIn really is more of a digital Rolodex. We wanted to create this hyper-targeted community that focused on serving millennials, that had a brand around that really related to millennials, and that tailored the experience so that you would get the matches that were perfect for you. And it was super easy to schedule that session and schedule follow-on sessions, because each session had an objective tied to it.
Okay, so I want to know, like, what was the first time, like, I need a little more clarity on how this sort of manifested.
Yeah.
So you're talking to people. Did you, like, set up a session? Did you do some consulting for other people?
That's a good question. So I tested the concept on this woman, Roland, who was a Georgetown junior who had reached out to me on LinkedIn and said, hey, I'm interested in management consulting, can I pick your brain? And basically with her, I tested this concept of, what if it's not just a one-time high-level 30-minute informational, but what if we actually have multiple sessions, and what if I come prepared to every session to actually be coaching her on what she's trying to accomplish? And so we went through things like, what is it actually, she thinks she's interested in management consulting, let's dive deep on what it actually means to work in management consulting. Are you actually interested in this? Yes, you still are. Okay. Now, what kinds of skills do you need to be successful in this role, and what in your experience should you be highlighting that's relevant to this career path?
So this is one person that you started on?
Yep. It's one person.
Did you charge her? Did you do it for free?
For free, yeah. She was one of our first customers a couple months later, but at this point it was all for free, just testing the concept and seeing if it was actually impactful on both ends.
So career coaching is not new.
Mm-hmm.
Here you are doing one-on-one career coaching. How did you, like, what was the next step that you took towards the Lighthouse?
Yeah. So I'll say one thing on career coaching, because I think it's really important differentiator to highlight, is that career coaching, like you said, is not new. Executive coaching is not new.
Yeah. This is sketchy.
Can we walk?
Can we come?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing's gonna fall.
Okay.
So
career coaching
is not new, but the model is incredibly out of date. So the model still is that you get matched with a traditional career coach who kind of gives you one size fits all advice. There's someone who's a full-time career coach, so they're not in it. They don't have experience in the field that you're looking to grow in. And there's a huge gap in terms of that. So you
think it's better to get advice from somebody who's not a full-time coach, who's super relevant to you, who's actually in your field?
Yeah.
They may want to hire you, or they may just want to give advice for a little extra money.
Yeah, for the insiders, it's a side hustle, and it's also an opportunity to give back in a structured way. And also, it's a way to grow in their own careers because they can put this on their LinkedIn or put this on their resume. In terms of why it's more effective, industries and roles are changing so quickly that advice becomes very quickly out of date. And so with the Lighthouse, you know that you're getting career insight that's personalized to you, that's rooted in real industry experience, and that's up to date and relevant. I think a good example is, like, if you're looking to become the best product manager you can be and you're 25, do you want to trust advice or insight from someone who's a traditional career coach and has been that for 20 years? Or do you trust insight from someone who's a product manager at a top company, one or two steps ahead of you?
Exactly. So tell me, how did you go from this one test case with this one woman into something larger?
So I did this one test case with this one woman. I did a lot of market research, of reading what else is out there. And then I was still working for PwC at this point, so I decided I needed a little bit more time to truly test this. So I took all of my vacation days over the course of December and January.
What did you tell them?
I told them that, I mean, I was living in China, my family was in the US. I said that I wanted to, you know, spend time with my family.
Uh-huh.
And luckily I worked with a couple of Australians that are really great about valuing work-life balance and travel, so it was understood.
Yeah.
It wasn't a red flag. So during that time, I wasn't working, and I basically, like, actually tested the concept. And the way I did that was I posted on my Instagram and on my Facebook saying, hey, this is the concept. Are you interested in being an insider on the platform? I built a really quick Wix website. We got our first pool of, I think, like 50 insiders over the course of 3 or 4 days. And then we had a few paying customers that really came through word of mouth. So, like, one was a friend who was getting her MBA, and she was the first person in her family to be pursuing an MBA, and she wanted help on navigating that process. Another was one of my Chinese friends who was applying to a job. So we had these, like, random paying customers that really came through word of mouth of, hey, this person's looking to navigate that. Why don't they do that using the Lighthouse? And then I quit my job.
No, did you quit your job because the Lighthouse was, like, generating revenue and you're like, okay, this could be something?
It was a small amount of revenue, but it was really the concept that in a matter of days, we had paying customers, people were paying for it, and more importantly, we had really high quality insiders on the platform that wanted to be part of what we were building.
And I assume you could do video or?
All through video, yep.
Or text if you don't want to do that?
Right now, all the sessions are video sessions. Sometimes people will turn the camera off if they don't have a working camera or if they're traveling or something like that.
And do you charge by the minutes?
So we charge per session, and this is jumping a little bit forward, but we actually are selling to companies that offer the Lighthouse as an employee benefit. So the beauty of that is that it's actually your company sponsoring this career growth rather than the individual investing themselves, which is how we started out.
So let's unpack that a little bit, both the business to consumer and the business to business. So how long did the Lighthouse exist as a business to consumer model?
In the business to consumer model, that probably went on for under a year. When we learned from that, the business to consumer model is really interesting because we learned exactly what our product should be. So all those early users shaped, designed what we now have as a product. It's the matching process, what kind of session topics are in high demand, what kind of guides we can offer them to have a higher impact session, either before, during, or after the session itself. But then ultimately what we realize is that even though we're moving in this direction where people are gonna be owning and managing and investing in their own careers, that right now people still expect this kind of growth and professional development to be sponsored by their companies. And companies are looking for ways to continue to employ, to develop and grow their own employees. So it was a really nice fit.
So if this tool existed, you still might be at PwC, you know, running this, running the Shanghai office.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
That's just a hypothetical, and I'm glad that the Lighthouse is happening. So you keep saying we. Is there somebody else or like a co-founder?
Yeah, so I'm a solo founder. I've always used the pronoun we to describe the Lighthouse, even when it was just me and an idea
so
and like
royal
a
we.
PowerPoint. Yes. Now we actually mean something, which is so exciting. So we have an incredible tech lead, Dimitri, who is really, I mean, he's a magician when it comes to building our product. He does everything from the front end design all the way to the back end architecture design.
Now, when did you link up with him?
He joined us last spring.
Was he the first person that you brought on board?
No. We had worked with a few other team members. So Dara is our marketing lead and she does all of our marketing and social media. And then there's a few other people that basically we've worked with in a project capacity. As a solo founder, you need to get really resourceful. You can't do it all. And so whether it's finding people that just really care about what you're building and work with you for a few months for free, or whether it's actually bringing on paid consultants when you need extra manpower before you're ready to make the decision on who that full team should be.
How long has the Lighthouse existed in total?
We were founded in April of 2018.
Oh, so only a year.
We're young.
Year and a half.
Talk about, you know, the corporate angle. So did companies reach out to you or did you have to hustle to get companies?
So the way the company selling to businesses came up was we were starting to see our members use the platform in very different ways than we expected.
Yeah.
So when we started, we were like all about the career transition, someone looking to make a change. And then we started seeing people having sessions around genuine career growth that didn't require a change. So things like the original use case that inspired this, promotions, people looking to, they were switching roles and wanted to make sure that they were set up for success in this new role within their company. And these, what's shocking about it is like these members who are paying and investing themselves work at huge companies that it's surprising that they feel like they need to use this additional resource because their companies aren't doing a good enough job themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one driver of starting to talk to businesses. And then when we started to talk to businesses, we went into those conversations and we're like, we know this is great for your employees. We know that this is incredibly high impact, that they love what we've built, but we know that for you to pay for it, there needs to be something extra in it for you. And so what is valuable to you about this? And really in those conversations with HR leaders, we figured out what that value proposition was, and many of those conversations led to our first buyers. So those people that were giving us advice are now some of our earliest partners in the B2B offering.
So what companies are you working with?
I can't talk about that.
Okay, not yet.
I can talk about the types of companies. So the types of companies that we're working with fall under two categories. One is fast growth tech companies. And the reason for that is they are growing really quickly. They sometimes don't have, HR is new. And then also they're a lot more innovative in the way that they think about supporting and growing and empowering their employees. So that's really great. And then the second bucket is companies that are professional service companies. So their product are their product is the people that they've brought together, their employees. So these are management consulting firms, PR agencies, law firms. What they're selling is their people, so they need to make sure that they're really investing in that product and those people.
Okay, so here you are, you've got some corporate clients. And have you taken outside money?
Yes, we have. So we started off bootstrapping with my own savings. That lasted for almost a year, and then, well, probably closer to 8 months. And then we raised a small friends and family round. And right now we are fundraising for a pre-seed round, which is primarily from individual angel investors, and also we're speaking with some early stage funds.
So are you spending most of your time fundraising or running the business? Both?
I'm spending my time on two things. One is bringing on more B2B partners and fundraising.
Fantastic.
So how long have you been actively fundraising?
That's a good question. So summer is really slow for fundraising. Well, okay, there's two answers to that. Some people say you're always fundraising, which I kind of agree with. You're always meeting people that you want to like invest in your vision, whether that's through capital, through joining your team, whatever. And a lot of these early investors have been conversations that we've been having for months. They've been relationships we've been building for months. So in that way, we've been fundraising since we started the company. But in terms of actively fundraising, I would say the beginning of August, and we're about one third.
Oh, you're like just starting.
Yeah.
You said one third.
Yeah, one third of the way through, and we expect September to be a busy month.
And what's your target fund?
We're raising 500K.
And so you're already starting to get some yeses.
Yes.
Did you have to go through a lot of no's to get to the yes?
Yeah, you're always going through no's. It sucks.
And is the typical answer that they say is, sorry, we're not interested in that space, or we are not qualified to invest in that space?
A typical answer you'll get is you're too early. That's the most frustrating one.
Right.
And I think what I've learned there is you really have to, that investors are all about de-risking an investment, and so you need to de-risk the opportunity for them as much as possible. And part of that is, as a founder, you know your business better than anyone, and you know that feeling when you know you have enough traction to, not to scale quite yet, but to like really grow it. And that confidence projects into conversations. And I think what I've seen by meeting and becoming friends with other founders is, for some people, like, I met this guy the other day and he's had 7 customers. He's a B2C product. And he's like, I raised $2 million. And I was shocked.
Yeah.
Because that, to me, I mean, we have many more than that. And we were still getting, you're too early. And really, these conversations have taught me that you have to own your own traction. And ultimately, as the founder of your business, you know best when you have that confidence where you need the capital to grow what you've already proven out.
Well, it's typically when you have more demand than you have supply. And, you know, in your case, if you have so many customers, you know, you need 2 or 3 of you, as, you know, you need to free up your time to divide and conquer and do the East Coast and the West Coast. And
deliver on those partnerships successfully, so you keep them as customers while also building a pipeline for, so that, you know, 6 months from now, your business isn't just relying on your, you know, couple of early clients, but you have more leads coming through all the time. Because B2B sales is slow, so you need to like plan for that.
So I assume, because of all of this, that you're like, you're not trying to have like a lifestyle coaching business. You're trying to make a scalable,
we're really focused on building a tech-enabled platform to scale and tap into this information and insight that right now is not being leveraged at all. Like, through your career experience, I'm sure that you have incredible insight that could be really, really helpful to someone who is looking to grow as a videographer. Through my career experience working in management consulting and now founding a company, I have a ton of insight that could really help someone who's looking to, you know, catapult their next career step. And so there's this huge untapped resource out there, and we really want to tap into that to scale it and to broaden the access to everyone, not just who you know or where you came from, and do that through our tech-enabled platform and also by taking this networked approach of, you know, scaling the people that have had these experiences.
Yeah, I think your primary roadblock is the people. The tech should be easy compared to that.
Yeah. And that was the like early proof point of figuring out that people are actually interested, incredibly talented people were interested in doing this. That was a huge validation point for us, where there's actually a ton of interest on that side. And so now it's really being able to build the demand for them and also making it as easy and impactful as possible.
Yeah, so my dream future, I'll film an episode like this in the morning, and then I can do some career coaching, you know, for 2 hours. Right after that, have a lunch, and then be at my desk, do some desk work. And, you know, it's just this 21st century, like, economy where, in theory, the true gig economy and the Lighthouse could be part of that.
Yeah, and you're already starting to see it even with people who have corporate jobs, that they're Lighthouse insiders who are doing this after work, on the weekends, on their lunch breaks, before they go to work at 7 a.m. And there's this huge interest among our generation to get involved in the gig economy. And things like the Lighthouse are a really great way to enable that.
Okay. I've got it.
Yay!
Now, here's the final question. It's the most important question.
What's that?
How do you think you've grown, Courtney, as an entrepreneur? In what ways?
I think I've grown as an entrepreneur by being a lot more comfortable with not having all the answers, and by leveraging the people around me and asking the right questions so that I do have the right answers to keep growing in our own business. I think that that's one thing, is really being comfortable with not having it all figured out. And that was a big change from my career in management consulting, where you are literally charging your clients because you're saying you have the answers. So that's one of the biggest things. The second thing is, you know, the devil's in the details, that coming up with the idea, coming up with the strategy is almost the easy part. Executing on it and tweaking it and changing it and making it work is the most frustrating but rewarding process. And it's a process. It doesn't happen. Like, the way you imagine it and the way it works is never the same thing. And so you just have to be committed to continuing to tweak and refine it until you figure it out.
Fantastic. That's really inspirational. And I'm very excited. So go check out the Lighthouse.
Thelighthouse.us.
Are there any other social networks where you can, like, tap into the Lighthouse?
We're on Instagram, which I'll share with you. We're on LinkedIn. We have a great newsletter that goes out every Tuesday that has, like, our upcoming events and also career advice that's really rooted in real industry experience and actionable advice. So sign up for that, and you can do so on our website.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Hunter.